Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard, a change and transformation consultant and self-confessed fintech enthusiast. And today, we continue our series looking at the evolution of fintech in 2023. Really happy to welcome Nina on the show. Nina is the co-founder of Blue Money. Super excited to welcome you, Nina. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard.
And listen, I've been chatting to, as I said before the show, I've been chatting to a lot of people over the last few weeks. And the first question I'm asking them all is, what excites them about FinTech in 2023? So I'm going to ask you the same question. What excites you about FinTech in 2023?
Oh my goodness. There's so much to be excited about right now, I suppose. And there's a lot to be also fearful of, I think, as well. So there's kind of competing feelings going on at the moment. I think what is exciting me about FinTech for 2023 is we've kind of hit this tipping point, to borrow from Malcolm Gladwell, I would say, where we've kind of we've had the challengers come up. We've had, you know, the Starlings, the Monzos, the Revoluts, and I'm speaking from a UK perspective. And now, you know, the US has come and joined us with all their challenger banks. And in other countries, you've got a lot of challenger banks coming in. We've had a lot of B2B fintech really pushing the envelope for the past, let's say, decade. And I would kind of call them the vanguard, right? They've gone ahead and really paved the way to show us that change is possible. They've really been the pacers, if you will, for the incumbent financial institutions to actually say, hey, what you were doing wasn't working. And we've now actually proven that people want a better experience. They want to be able to send money faster and for less, right? As Wise has proven for us. We've definitely seen a lot of the features that Monzo, Starling, Revolut were putting out are now being adopted by the high street banks here in the UK. So I think they've really paved the way for us in the past, let's say 10 years, to allow us to now kind of take that and move forward and build on top of that. And I kind of jokingly say with my friends, you know, they walked so we could run. And what really excites me is we have now proven what's possible. We've proven there's an appetite. And on top of that, we've also built a lot of the necessary infrastructure and have had a lot of those difficult conversations to get us to a point where we can now build even more interesting things on top of that. So an example that I give is, well, obviously the States is a bit behind with Fed now, but, you know, faster payments has been around in the States for decades now. Is that right? Like something like
definitely,
that.
Definitely. Definitely. It's been around for a while.
Yeah, for at least almost two decades, I want to say. Open banking, I think, is really coming into its own. You know, it used to be we were really dragging the incumbent banks, you know, along. And now they're really looking at it as how can it be a strategic advantage, which now means that, okay, we've got that. Let's say we've also got, you know, the likes of Rails or Modular that are allowing small startups like myself to build and spin out really interesting products faster and less capitally intensive than ever before, which now means that we can get really specific about who we want to serve. And that, I think, is what's most exciting to me, is this opportunity for us to now be much more specific about who we serve, whether that's a niche group. So for us at Bloom Money, that's serving diaspora communities. That's first, second, third generation immigrants to the UK and Europe. But we've also seen Daylight in the US has just announced their Series A, and they're serving LGBT plus communities. And we're seeing, you know, banks for dentists and banks for musicians and digital nomads and gamers. And it's a really exciting time for creators and all that stuff. So I think what excites me is that we have laid the groundwork to build really interesting community-specific products that can be tailored to people's actual lifestyles, life events, and expectations.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there. And, you know, I've asked this question a lot to people over the last few weeks. And in most instances, we're looking forward, which is a great thing to think about, right? But also, you know, the roots of fintech sort of go back a long, long way to exactly to which you alluded to. And if we look at the start of sort of 1967-ish to sort of 2008, the first ATM, the first ATM came out, the first Barclays ATM came out, I think in like 1967, 1970, something like that. Yep. Then all of a sudden, you know, NASDAQ came out. And, you know, things started, you know, digitizing. And we've obviously gone on this train over the last few years, last few decades. And then, you know, there was a 2008 crash, which you sort of alluded to, and the real pickup of digitalization and making certain that we give the consumers what they want, right? I get a sense, just listening to you, that, you know, the next evolution, I feel like there's not a pause right now, but there's going to be a building phase which takes up all of the infrastructure that was built and sort of moves us forward into the next stage of this fintech build that we've been building over the last few decades. And I feel that I don't know what your thoughts are there, but there's a move away from the Western-dominated financial world to more of an advancement towards the rest of the world, the emerging countries, and making those digital. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yes, absolutely. I think as an American living in the UK for nearly a decade, I do get very frustrated because I think we can be so Western-centric oftentimes. I actually wrote my master's thesis on poor innovation in Western banking. And one of the kind of parting shots that I gave in my conclusion was actually, it would be far more interesting to look at innovation in emerging markets because they've not been saddled with, you know, core IBM infrastructure the way that, you know, all of the other banks have been. And they've been therefore able to leapfrog us in many senses. I was just in Taiwan visiting family, and it was really fascinating to see people using Line Pay, which is really, really popular in Taiwan. And I think it's something like 90% penetration of people who use Line day to day, if not 95%. And people use Line Pay everywhere, out and about. When I went to Kenya, you know, seeing people pay, I was literally in Masai Mara, you know, and my friend was able to pay for our tour using M-Pesa. It was all, you know, through her phone. And that was fascinating to me to kind of see the advancements that emerging markets are making. They're actually laying out a bit of a blueprint for the rest of us. And I think coming out, well, we're still obviously in a pandemic, but as we are kind of emerging to a more, quote, normal life, we see the resurgence of the QR code, the biggest comeback that ever was in the Western world, where all of a sudden we're looking at QR codes and all my family members in China and Taiwan are laughing and going like, we've been using QR codes forever, right? So it's really interesting to see that. I think it bodes really well for us and what we might be able to do. I'm really excited about how perhaps we can look at borrowing from the Alipays, the Line Pays, the M-Pesas, and can we do consumer bank to merchant bank transactions, account to account, using QR codes potentially? Is that something that we can move towards? Can we actually start to cut out card networks? I shouldn't say that out loud because I once worked for MasterCard, but you know, I think even they are thinking about that at MasterCard, and they're thinking about what is the next step if the card becomes obsolete. And so I'm really excited, and I think taking inspiration from the rest of the world is really exciting for us in the Western world.
Yeah, no, definitely. And as this evolution takes place, what do you see as some of the challenges in maybe that are going to hit us in 2023 and maybe beyond that, you know, the fintech community need to be aware of and need to, you know, really plan and strategize for?
Yeah, I think it's manifold, right? Given the current economic situation, I think, you know, for a really long time in a low interest environment, let's call it worldwide, we were able to kind of play around with our products and how we were going to create revenue or not create revenue at all, because there was a lot of venture capital money that was searching for yield, right? And so there's going to be a lot less venture subsidized products that come out, which I think is a good thing. We need to be put through our paces. We need to actually go back to fundamentals and how do financial services actually make money? It doesn't matter if you're a fintech company. Yes, that can bring your OPEX down for sure, but you still need to be generating revenue somewhere. And I think we are definitely past the point where we can give things away for free. I think that was a luxury that Revolut, Monzo kind of were allowed to have that the rest of us now just simply cannot do. I also think that because of, and I'm going to say the C word, the rise of cryptocurrency, and I'm right now speaking after the absolutely mind-boggling crash of FTX just, 2 weeks ago, I think there's a lot of trust that is going to need to be rebuilt. And sadly, the crypto world has kind of splashed back onto those of us in, let's call it the TradFi world. I wouldn't even consider myself TradFi, but I guess we as fintech companies, if you're not Web3, then you're considered TradFi. And I really worry about this in particular, especially for me, given that we are serving potentially vulnerable customers, people who are new to a country, who are already unfamiliar with the financial system, who are already wary of the government, of large institutions, and building trust is already so difficult with them. Now, maybe perhaps they've been burned. You know, maybe they've heard about crypto somewhere. They went and bought a bit of Bitcoin. It's come crashing down. There's been a splashback effect on the rest of us. And it's interesting because I remember when I first started my career in fintech, the biggest thing that the incumbents would say that they had as an advantage was not, you know, their network of branches. It wasn't that necessarily even their balance sheet. It was trust, right? And they would say, you know, you draw a picture of a bank, an icon of a bank, and it's three really strong, thick pillars. And it symbolizes the security, the safety. And, you know, the Wises and the rest of the challengers of that time definitely said, well, actually, you've been doing a bit of hanky-panky and you've lost us a lot of money with the financial crash. But I think they could take advantage of the financial crash and then kind of divert that trust towards fintech companies. We're now in a time where I think we have to relearn how to build trust, relearn that actually we can't just blindly take people's money, and that education needs to go hand in hand with that, because it's no good if we're just giving out mortgages left, right, and center, if we're, you know, promising 10% yield on an account, if people don't know what's actually happening with their money. And money is so emotional on a personal level. I'm talking about B2C fintech, of course, but probably even for B2B, it is so personal. It is so emotional. And so we have to be very mindful of that as we build products moving forward.
Yeah, I like this. You know, we've actually chatted over the last few weeks about trust and security, right? And let's dive into this bit. I mean, what do customers define this as? And in my opinion, what I believe is customers define trust as a financial institution's ability to keep their money and data safe, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what we should be doing. And, you know, fair enough, you know, the regulators and others in the fintech ecosystem allowed an approach to adopting fintech. So they gave them the growth and the space to go out and grow and adopt. But I think right now, I believe that the role of the regulator is going to change, right? It is already changing. And, you know, they need to be able to mitigate these risks. So, you know, right now, definitely in Europe, there's new regulation coming out in the crypto space. We're going to see exactly what that looks like. And I know across the US and in different parts of the UK as well, there's, you know, very much a a different view as to the role of the regulator now in fintech ecosystem. And how do you see that playing out? I mean, because from my perspective, that's where trust is gained, right? Being able to regulate, being able to tell people, by the way, if you put your money in FTX, if it goes under, we got your backs. Yeah, what's your thoughts on that?
I think what a regulator is there for is exactly as you say, is kind of that peace of mind, that safety. But for us as regulated entities, it's accountability. And we've just not seen that recently. Regulators are regulators, and they're there to protect consumers. They're there to kind of safeguard everyone and every part of the ecosystem, right? And I think having been burned after the past few years, I would not be surprised if the regulators across the world start to tighten things up a bit. I think we're already experiencing that here in the UK. A lot of people ask me, because I was actually born and raised in the Silicon Valley, and people always say, why did you move to London? Why are you pursuing a career in fintech in London? And one of the answers is that I truly believe that the FCA is one of the most progressive and like innovative, if I may, regulators out there. But I think there's definitely been a bit of concern about, has it become too much? And we saw with peer-to-peer lending, there was a bit of a fallout from that. Now, you know, crypto, there's often jokes that the FCA has a different flavor every year, and it's that thing that they're going to focus on. And I think we all kind of chat about it behind closed doors with each other, those of us within the industry. I think that there's going to be a lot more holding to account. There was a really brilliant essay written by Alex Johnson, who's based in the States, and he was speaking from an American perspective, but he was writing his blog or newsletter is called Fintech Takes. And he was saying that actually in the States, at least, and I would agree to a certain extent here in the UK, fintech companies have gotten away with so much of fraud in particular. And it's always been a little bit of a slap on the wrist at best, or sorry, I should say at worst. You more hear about, you know, Deutsche Bank getting a massive fine for money laundering. But actually, up until recently, what about Revolut? What about Monzo? And so I think there's going to be a lot more of that holding to account now. It's going to be actually, well, you're grown up now, Revolut. We're going to start actually auditing you. We're going to actually start following the money, and you need to be able to be held to account. I think it's a wonderful thing because, as you said already, being able to say, look us up, we're on the FCA register, you can trust us, we are being held to account, goes a long way in building that trust. But of course, it's a fine line to walk between innovation and, you know, just keeping everything buttoned up. And it would be a lot easier for the FCA to just say, right, what are you? Are you consumer credit? Are you, you know, savings? Are you investment? What are you? Can we put you in a bucket? It's easier for us to regulate you that way. I'm hoping that they are still going to remain open enough to allow us to innovate where we can, to push the envelope within their bounds. And they've been great with that with the FCA sandbox already. But I do expect a bit more tightening in the coming months and years. And I think we need it, frankly.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
Being able to continue to innovate, but innovate within certain boundaries, is definitely something that I see as part of the next evolution, right? So the next evolution of where we're going. And also, most probably the maturity of some businesses and the maturity of the market. And then, you know, further down the line, further adoption. People talk about crypto and people talk about adoption, but, you know, to get people to adopt something, back to the trust and security thing, you need that trust and security. But also, I think that, you know, part of this innovation is, you know, back in the, maybe in the early 2008, 2009, there definitely was a fintech vs bank situation. There was a, you know, fintechs potentially going out there trying to take bits of the pie. But right now, I don't know, I get the sense that there's more collaboration, much more collaboration between banks and fintechs and ventures with inside banks and tech businesses or tech departments inside banks, and really collaborating, understanding the ecosystem, going out there, making really clever investments or making really clever partnerships. So, you know, the ecosystem as a whole benefits rather than the individual company or individual person. Do you see that continuing over the next coming years?
I do. I definitely do. I think we're all still trying to figure out where we fit in the ecosystem, I think. We're all kind of like, we've walked into this like really crowded room and we're just like, right, okay, can I find a spot over here in this corner? Sorry, didn't mean to, you know, like, we're still finding our way, but we're less on top of each other now or aggressive. I think there is, you see a lot more press releases where there are banks that are working with smaller businesses. You know, I used to work at Bud, which is an open banking platform, and Bud has been working with HSBC, with Investec, and that's wonderful to see. You know, you see really small businesses. I think AppTap is like 11 people and they're working with TSB, and that's brilliant, right? And so we're seeing a lot more of that. I think what has been the biggest driver of that is a cultural shift. And again, you know, from the beginning of our conversation, I was saying that they walked so we could run. I think a lot of that walking was proving out that we're here to stay, that, you know, fintech isn't going anywhere. And so whether it's because they've opened with open arms and, you know, special shout out to NatWest and HSBC, who have been very forthcoming with open banking in particular. I know when it comes to VRP, they've been at the forefront. They're ready. They're like alpha testing on top of it very, very quickly. And you've got a few people lagging behind. I won't name any names, but I think those of us in the know all know who are kind of dragging their feet a bit. But you've got more people kind of coming along and saying, okay, you know what? The change is happening. It's not going away. Let's just strap in, do it, and find where we can fit in here and where it can be mutually beneficial for us and for these new companies. So I hope it continues on. I think it will. And I think as well, there's just been this spirit of like curiosity that has been instilled over the past decade where, you know, maybe there has been an innovation function within the bank for a really long time. And maybe they're looking at like digital transformation. Fine. And they were doing that before. But now I think there's even the curiosity to go beyond that and kind of go, right, okay, so what are these youngsters over in Shoreditch? What are they talking about? And let's be proactive instead of them, as Wise once did, instead of doing a funeral through the streets of London saying death to the banks. Why don't we go and actually meet them and be proactive? And I think I remember one time we did have a team from HSBC in our offices in Hackney on the canal when I was at Bud. And it was really, you know, it was a bit of like startup tourism, but it was really delightful to kind of see these suits all, you know, carrying their Dell computers, walking in to our, you know, open plan office on the canal. And so I hope to see more of that. And I think it's just healthy for the ecosystem as a whole.
But this, I mean, I think so as well. And, you know, this is innovation, right? This is how we should be innovating and building up the ecosystem. And I think, you know, the big banks and others, even the wealth managers have realized that in order to make certain, maybe to continue building our products that consumers want, they most probably don't have the culture and the mindset internally to do that. So they need to look outside. They need to figure out, you know, who they can partner up with, which products best suit their customers, and then somehow bring not only the product, but the mindset internally, right? And that's why, you know, I've seen a lot and over the last few years of the so-called entrepreneur in residence gigs, right, come up. And I think that, again, is something really, really interesting. I've also, you know, luckily enough, we mentioned emerging markets. I'm going to be on an accelerator in India, actually, and the likes of JP Morgan and others are participating in it. And what are they doing? They're looking, obviously, at facilitating the growth of fintech in India, but also, quite interestingly, figuring out how some of these companies in the accelerator can help them build out their product in India, right? So I think that type of facilitation, that type of thinking, that type of mindset, in the past, you know, I've been in the game for, you know, 20 years, just wasn't there. But definitely over the last few years, it's sort of just spurred up. And people, as you say, they're curious. They want to get into the game. And they also want to figure out and also realize that the mindset to do that is slightly different. So they start leveraging the entrepreneurs outside to bring that innovation internally.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as you're talking about innovation, what do you see as the next trends or the top three trends in fintech space as we head into 2023?
Oh gosh, top three trends. Okay, well, first, I would say there is going to be a continuation of open banking into open data more broadly. It's not really a prediction, really. It's just really reading the room, right? And I think everyone is moving towards that already. I think about it 5 years ago when I was at Bud and we were discussing APIs. And I have this vivid image of working with one of our backend engineers, who's actually now our CTO at Bloom, and having to explain to folks what API documentation should look like. And having to say, actually, you shouldn't be sending us API documentation in a Word document. And having to actually put together a guide on how to create API documentation. But I think everyone's thinking about public APIs now and how can we make it possible for someone else to consume this data. We saw that with Nutmeg, we saw that with Wealthify, PensionBee making their APIs public. And I think that open banking is going to expand beyond just current accounts, but into other areas of financial services, including things like insurance, hopefully investments. And I'm very excited about that. I think that can only bode well for all of us and create a lot of competition, a lot of transparency, and ultimately fairer outcomes for end consumers. So I'm really, really excited about that. I think that there's going to be an explosion of, by way of that, the more you open things up, the more there's going to be room and vectors for bad actors to come in. So I think there's going to be a lot of looking at RegTech, looking at various compliance functions and fraud and transaction monitoring and different ways to look at it, whether it's behavioral, whether it's purely transactional. And I think, of course, it's going to be really important for us to continue to do that as we open things up. And then lastly, I think I touched on it briefly at the beginning of the conversation. Because we have built this infrastructure, we have the services for young companies like Bloom Money to get up and running. I think we're going to see a lot more of what I like to call affinity financial services. So, you know, I alluded to Daylight and the LGBT plus bank, Bloom serving migrant communities, and all these other plethora of banks, or sorry, I shouldn't call them banks. Obviously, they're not banks, but let's call them EMIs. I think what this is going to allow us to do is to be much more specific and less one size fits all, which is what banks do. And it's almost like the pendulum swinging back to where it once was. I was in Edinburgh a few months ago for the Fringe, which was delightful. And I stopped in my tracks on George Street because there is, I think it's now a Fat Face, which for those that don't know is just like a fast fashion brand. But the facade was stunning and it was the linen workers bank. And that really just struck a chord with me because we have been here before. We've seen that tree, we've walked this path, and it's all kind of, yeah, as I said, the pendulum is swinging back the other way, where there was once upon a time where you had the linen workers bank, where you had the coal miners bank, you had people coming together within these affinity groups. You had, you know, the Navy sailors that were all banking together. And there's a reason that we do this because community really holds us together. People identify with their community, whether today that's LGBT plus, whether that's vets, you know, as they are discharged from service, whether that's migrants moving to a new country. And there's very specific things that come with that where LGBT plus folks are looking for, you know, it's expensive to get a surrogate if you want to start a family, right? Or if you want to have an IVF or an adoption process, all of that is expensive. Or if you are an immigrant that's come to this country and this is a real life example. There was a guy who from the Democratic Republic of Congo who worked on oil rigs. That's a highly skilled job and has come to the UK and could easily go and do that, you know, in Northern Scotland. but has to recertify, who's going to pay for that? Well, perhaps we can think about loans for that specific need, right? So I'm very excited about Affinity and how we can start serving people for their life needs, for their life stages more accurately. And I think that all comes from things like open banking. So yeah, those three things. I'm really excited for what the future holds.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And yeah, you know, listen, open banking, embedded finance, embedded insurance, like it's super exciting time to be involved in that space. And as we wrap this up, what's the one bit of advice that you'd like to give to the fintech community out there as we head into a 2023?
Gosh, the advice I would give to the fintech community is just everything needs to go back to basics, I think. And I think for me, everything ends up being speaking to the customer. And I'm always still shocked to this day when I go in and speak to bankers who have come up with a new product who have not actually spoken to a single customer yet. And you see this not just at banks, by the way, the number of fintech startups where, you know, I get put in touch with so many fintech founders and I ask them, like, well, how many people have you spoken to? You're showing me your deck. You're about to go fundraise. How many people have you, you know, user research have you done? Have you done any, you know, focus groups? Oh, I haven't spoken to anyone yet. And I'm going here, sat there, you know, scratching my head going, well, okay, how do you know people want to use it then? And perhaps I'm spoiled in that I live in Lewisham. I step out my front door and I can speak to anyone at the Lewisham market and that's my target audience. But it's my favorite thing about my job is speaking to our end customer. So as you're building products, whether that is speaking to an asset manager because you're building technology for them and actually understanding their pain points, do they really care about this feature that you're building? Or if you're a B2C company or if you're a bank that's building a new feature, take the time. It's worth the investment because it will save you millions out the other end if you've done your job right.
Yeah, and you know, definitely right there. Some really sage advice. And you know, if folks out there want to get in touch with you and the team, what's the easiest way to do that?
Well, you can definitely find me on LinkedIn. I used to be very active on Twitter, but I've since relegated that activity given current events. You can definitely find me on LinkedIn, Nina Mohanty, or you can email us at hello@bluemoney.co. That's C-O. But usually someone knows me and is able to connect the dots. So please feel free to reach out. I'm always happy to share what we're working on and just chat fintech.
Awesome. And Nina, thanks so much for joining us today. And folks out there, looking forward to you joining us again next week as we continue our series of looking forward into fintech in 2023. Speak to you all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Fintech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.